Cincinnati Public Radio and Cincinnati Shakespeare Company proudly present William Shakespeare's political thriller, Julius Caesar, adapted and directed for radio by Jeremy Dubin from the stage production by Christian Wiltshire. The cast includes Marcus Anthony, Angelique Archer, Ariana Chai, Sarah Clark, Colleen Doherty, Jeremy Dubin, Cal Harris, Lennon Hu, Abigail Nacken, and Brian Isaac Phillips. And now, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend us your ears as we take a stab at Julius Caesar.
In the year 44 BC, even as the Roman Empire dominates the world, one single name dominates the empire. Julius Caesar. A brilliant military tactician, Caesar's many successful campaigns have expanded the empire, brought great wealth to Rome, and secured his popularity with its citizens. And Caesar has leveraged that popularity to become the leader of the Roman Senate, which position has only amplified his popularity all the more. In fact, so fervent are Caesar's followers that even though Rome has long been a republic, they have begun to shout that Caesar should be made a king, subject to no law but his own. Though publicly dismissive of the notion, it is widely believed that Caesar agrees. The other senators have recognized the danger that Caesar represents. The adoration of the commoners, the allegiance of the military, and his own ambitious nature, if unchecked, could undermine the very foundation of Rome's republic. Which brings us to the Feast of Lupercal, a joyous festive holiday marked by sport and celebration. Caesar is on his way to observe the proceedings, surrounded by a train of senators, including his beloved and trusted ally, Mark Antony. An avid athlete, Antony will be participating in the day's games. As they traverse one of Rome's many public squares, the masses cheering wildly for Caesar as he passes, one shrill voice sounds out above the rest.
Caesar!
Ha! Who calls? Who is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue shriller than all the music. Cry, Caesar, speak! Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of March!
What man is that?
A soothsayer.
Set him before me. Let me see his face.
Fellow, come from the throng. Look upon Caesar.
Caesar! Beware the Ides of March!
He is a dreamer. Let us leave him. Pass.
Caesar and his train proceed onward towards the great amphitheater where they will preside over the day's games and festivities. The cheering throng follows, leaving behind in the abandoned square two solitary senators, the stoic Marcus Brutus and the shrewd and subtle Caius Cassius. Judging by their countenance, they do not share in the general mood of merriment.
Will you go see the order of the course?
Not I. I am not gamesome. I do lack some part of that quick spirit that is in Antony. Let me not hinder, Cassius, your desires. I'll leave you.
Brutus, I do observe you now of late. I have not from your eyes that gentleness and show of love as I was wont to have.
Cassius, be not deceived. If I have veiled my look, I turn the trouble of my countenance merely upon myself. Vexed I am of late with passions of some difference. But let not therefore my good friends be grieved, among which number, Cassius, be you one.
Then, Brutus, I have much mistook your passion, by means whereof this breast of mine hath buried thoughts of great value, worthy cogitation. It is very much lamented, Brutus, that you have no such mirrors as will turn your hidden worthiness into your eye. Therefore, good Brutus, be prepared to hear, and I will modestly discover to yourself that of yourself which you yet know not of.
What means this shouting? I do fear the people choose Caesar for their king.
Aye, do you fear it? Then I must think you would not have it so.
I would not, Cassius, yet I love him well. But wherefore do you hold me here so long? What is it that you would impart to me?
I cannot tell what you or other men may think of this life, but for my single self, I had as lief not be, as live to be in awe as such a one as I myself. I was born free as Caesar. So were you. We both have fed as well. We can both endure the winter's cold as well as he. For once upon a raw and gusty day, the troubled Tiber chafing with her shores, Caesar said to me, Dearest thou, Cassius, now leap in with me into the angry flood and swim to yonder point. Upon the word, accoutred as I was, I plunged in and bade him follow me. So indeed he did. But ere we could arrive the point proposed, Caesar cried, "Help me, Cassius, or I sink!" So from the waves of the Tiber bore I the tired Caesar. And this man is now become a god, and Cassius is a wretched creature and must bend his body if Caesar carelessly but nods on him. Ye gods, it doth amaze me, a man of such a feeble temper should so get the start of the majestic world and bear the palm alone.
Another general shout. I do believe that these applauses are for some new honors that are heaped on Caesar.
Why, man, he doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus, and we, petty men, walk under his huge legs and peep about to find ourselves dishonorable graves. Men, at some time, are masters of their fate. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves that we are underlings. When went there by an age since the great flood, but it was famed with more than with one man? When could they say, till now, that talked of Rome, that her wide walks encompass but one man? Now 'tis Rome indeed, and room enough when there is in it but one only man. Oh, you and I have heard our father say there was a Brutus once that would have brooked the eternal devil to keep his state in Rome as easily as a king.
That you do love me, I am nothing jealous. What you would work me to, I have some aim. What you have said, I will with patience hear, and find a time both meet to hear and answer such high things. Till then, my noble friend, chew upon this. Brutus had rather be a villager than to repute himself a son of Rome under these hard conditions as this time is like to lay upon us.
I am glad that my weak words have struck but thus much show of fire from Brutus.
The games are done, and Caesar is returning.
As they pass by, pluck Casca by the sleeve. He will, after his sour fashion, tell us what hath proceeded worthy of note today.
I will do so. But look you, Cassius, the angry spot doth glow on Caesar's brow, and all the rest look like a chidden train.
Casca will tell us what the matter is.
Cassius and Brutus pluck their fellow senator Casca from the returning crowd, but not without the notice of the keen-eyed Caesar.
Antonio.
Caesar.
Let me have men about me that are fat, sleek-headed men, and such as sleep o' nights. Yon Cassius has a lean and hungry look. He thinks too much. Such men are dangerous.
Fear him not, Caesar. He's not dangerous. He is a noble Roman and well given.
Would he were fatter. But I fear him not. Yet if my name were liable to fear, I do not know the man I should avoid. So soon as that, spare Cassius. Such men as he be never at heart's ease whilst they behold a greater than themselves. And therefore are they very dangerous. I rather tell thee what is to be feared than what I fear, for always I am Caesar. Come tell me truly what thou think'st of him.
You pulled me by the cloak. Would speak with me?
Aye, Casca. Tell us what hath chanced today that Caesar looks so sad.
Why, you were with him, were you not?
I should not then ask Casca what had chanced.
Why, there was a crown offered him, and being offered him, he put it by with the back of his hand, thus, and the people fell a-shouting.
What was the second noise for?
Why, for that too.
They shouted thrice. What was the last cry for?
Why, for that too.
Was the crown offered him thrice?
Aye, Mary was, and he put it by thrice, every time gentler than other. And at every putting by, mine honest neighbors shouted.
Who offered him the crown?
Why, Antony.
Tell us the manner of it, gentle Casca.
It was mere foolery. I did not mark it. I saw Mark Antony offer him a crown, and as I told you, he put it by once. But for all that, to my thinking, he would fain have had it. Then he offered it to him again, then he put it by again. But to my thinking, he was very loath to lay his fingers off it. And then he offered it to him the third time. He put it the third time by, and still, as he refused it, the rabblement hooted and clapped their chopped hands and threw up their sweaty nightcaps and uttered such a deal of stinking breath because Caesar refused the crown that it had almost choked Caesar, for he swooned and fell down at it. And for mine own part, I durst not laugh for fear of opening my lips and receiving the bad air.
What said he when he came unto himself?
He said,
If he had done or said anything amiss, he desired their worships to think it was his infirmity.
3 or 4 wenches where I stood cried, Alas, good soul, and forgave him with all their hearts. But there's no heed to be taken from them. If Caesar had stabbed their mothers, they would have done no less.
Did Cicero say anything?
Aye, he spoke Greek.
To what effect?
Those that understood him smiled at one another and shook their heads, but for mine own part, it was Greek to me. I could tell you more news, too. Murillus and Flavius, for pulling scarves off Caesar's images, are put to silence. Fare you well. There was more foolery yet if I could remember it.
Will you dine with me tomorrow?
Aye, if I be alive, and your mind hold, and your dinner worth eating.
Good. I will expect you.
Do so. Farewell both.
What a blunt fellow this has grown to be. He was quick-mettled when he went to school.
This rudeness is a sauce to his good wit, which gives men's stomach to digest his words with better appetite.
And so it is. For this time, I will leave you. Tomorrow, if you please to speak with me, come home to me, and I will wait for you.
I will do so. Till then, think of the world.
Our scene shifts from the public square to the privacy of Brutus' garden, where for many hours Brutus has wrestled with the dilemma before him, weighing the potential danger that Caesar's ambitious nature poses to the Republic against the morality of the violent act that could eliminate that danger. As he has considered the conundrum, midnight has come and gone.
What, Lucius Ho?
Called you, my lord?
Get me a taper in my study, Lucius. When it is lighted, come and call me here.
I will, my lord.
It must be by his death. And for my part, I know no personal cause to spurn at him. But for the general. He would be crowned. How that might change his nature, there's the question. It is bright day that brings forth the adder, and that craves wary walking. Crown him that, and then I grant we put a sting in him that at his will he may do danger with. The abuse of greatness is when it disjoins remorse from power. And to speak truth of Caesar, I have not known when his affection swayed more than his reason. But 'tis common proof that lowliness is young ambition's ladder, whereto the climber upward turns his face. But when he once attains the utmost round, he then unto the ladder turns his back, looks into the clouds, scorning the base degrees by which he did ascend. So Caesar may, then lest he may prevent. And since the quarrel will bear no color for the thing he is, fashion it thus, that what he is augmented would run to these and these extremities. And therefore, think him as a serpent's egg, which hatched would as his kind grow mischievous and kill him in the shell.
The taper burneth in your closet, sir.
'Tis good. Go to the gate. Somebody knocks. Since Cassius first had wet me against Caesar, I have not slept. Between the acting of a dreadful thing and the first motion, all the interim is like a phantasma or a hideous dream.
Sir, 'tis your brother Cassius at the door, who doth desire to see you.
Is he alone?
No, sir, there are more with him.
Do you know them?
No, sir, their hats are plucked about their ears and half their faces buried in their cloaks.
Let him enter. They are the faction.
Lucius leads in Caius Cassius, followed by the nervous cabal of senators who have joined his cause.
I think we are too bold upon your rest. Good morrow, Brutus. Do we trouble you?
I have been up this hour, awake all night. Know I these men that come along with you?
Yes, every man of them. And no man here but honors you. And every one doth wish you had that opinion of yourself which every noble Roman bears of you. This is Casca.
He is welcome hither.
This Decius?
He is welcome too.
This Cinna?
They are all welcome. Give me your hands all over, one by one.
And let us swear our resolution.
No, not an oath. If not the face of men, the sufferance of our souls, the time's abuse. If these be motives weak, break off betimes, and every man hints to his idle bed. Do not stain the even virtue of our enterprise to think that our cause or our performance did need an oath. When every drop of blood that every Roman bears, and nobly bears, is guilty of a several bastardy, if he do break the smallest particle of any promise that hath passed from him.
Shall no man else be touched but only Caesar?
Decius, well urged. I think it is not meet Mark Antony, so well beloved of Caesar, should outlive Caesar. Which to prevent, let Antony and Caesar fall together.
Our course will seem too bloody, Caius Cassius, to cut the head off and then hack the limbs, for Antony is but a limb of Caesar. Let's be sacrificers, but not butchers, Caius. We all stand up against the spirit of Caesar, and in the spirit of men there is no blood. Oh, that we then could come by Caesar's spirit and not dismember Caesar. But alas, Caesar must bleed for it. And gentle friends, let's kill him boldly, but not wrathfully. Let's carve him as a dish fit for the gods, not hew him as a carcass fit for hounds. And for Mark Antony, think not of him, for he can do no more than Caesar's arm when Caesar's head is off.
Yet I fear him, for the engrafted love he bears to Caesar.
Alas, good Cassius, do not think of him.
There is no fear in him. Let him not die, for he will live and laugh at this hereafter.
Peace. Count the clock.
The clock hath stricken three.
'Tis time to part.
But it is doubtful yet whether Caesar will come forth this day or no. For he is superstitious grown of late. The unaccustomed terror of this night and the persuasion of his augurers may hold him from the capital today.
Never fear that. If he be so resolved, I can o'ersway him. Let me work. I will bring him to the capital.
Nay, we will all of us be there to fetch him.
By the eighth hour, is that the uttermost?
Be that the uttermost, and fail not then.
The morning comes upon us. We'll leave you, Brutus, and friends, disperse yourselves. But all remember what you have said, and show yourselves true Romans.
Good gentlemen, look fresh and merrily. Let not our looks put on our purposes, but bear it as our Roman actors do, with untired spirits and formal constancy. So good morrow to you, every one.
The conspirators file out, leaving Brutus once again alone.
Boy, Lucius, fast asleep. It is no matter.
Brutus, my lord.
Portia, what mean you? Wherefore rise you now? It is not for your health thus to commit your weak condition to the raw cold morning.
Nor for yours neither. You have ungently, Brutus, stole from my bed. Dear my lord, make me acquainted with your cause of grief.
I am not well in health, and that is all.
Brutus is wise, and were he not in health, he would embrace the means to come by it. No, my Brutus, you have some sick offense within your mind, which by the right and virtue of my place I ought to know of. And upon my knees, I charm you by my once commended beauty, by all your vows of love, and that great vow which did incorporate and make us one, that you unfold to me. Yourself, your half, why you are heavy.
Kneel not, gentle Portia.
I should not need if you were gentle Brutus. Within the bond of marriage, tell me, Brutus, is it accepted I should know no secrets that pertain to you? Am I yourself, but as it were, in sort of limitation, to keep with you at meals, comfort your bed, and talk to you sometimes? Dwell I but in the suburbs of your good pleasure. If it be no more, Portia is Brutus's harlot, not his wife.
You are my true and honorable wife.
If this were true, then I should know this secret. Tell me your counsels. I will not disclose them. I have made strong proof of my constancy, giving myself a voluntary wound here in the thigh. Can I bear that with patience and not my husband's secrets?
Oh, ye gods, render me worthy of this noble wife. Portia, go in a while, and by thy bosom shall partake the secrets of my heart.
Elsewhere in Rome, we see that Brutus is not the only one whom sleep has eluded this night. Alone in his atrium, Julius Caesar looks out upon the violently roiling skies. Between the terrible storms and his wife Calpurnia's disturbing dreams, the small hours of the morn have been harrowing.
Nor heaven nor earth have been at peace tonight. Thrice hath Calpurnia in her sleep cried out, "Help, ho, they murder Caesar." Who's within?
What mean you, Caesar? Think you to walk forth? You shall not stir out of the house today.
Caesar shall forth. The things that threaten me never looked but on my back. When they shall see the face of Caesar, they are vanishing.
Caesar, I never stood on ceremonies, yet now they fright me. There is one within. Besides the things that we have heard and seen, recounts most horrid sights seen by the watch. A lioness hath whelped in the streets, and graves have yawned and yielded up their dead. Fierce, fiery warriors fight upon the clouds, which drizzled blood upon the capital. Oh, Caesar, these things are beyond all use, and I do fear them.
Yet Caesar shall go forth, for these predictions are to the world in general as to Caesar.
When beggars die, there are no comets seen. The heavens themselves blaze forth the death of princes.
Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once. Danger knows full well that Caesar is more dangerous than he. We are two lions littered in one day, and I the elder and more terrible, and Caesar shall go forth.
Alas, my lord, your wisdom is consumed in confidence. Do not go forth today. Call it my fear that keeps you in the house and not your own. Let me, upon my knee, prevail in this.
For thy humor, I will stay at home.
Caesar, all hail.
Here's Decius. He shall tell them so.
Good morrow, worthy Caesar. I come to fetch you to the Senate House.
And you are come in very happy time to bear my greetings to the senators and tell them that I will not come today. Cannot is false, and that I dare not falser. I will not come today. Tell them so, Decius.
Say he is sick.
Shall Caesar send a lie? Have I in conquest stretched mine arm so far to be afeard to tell graybeards the truth? Decius, go tell them Caesar will not come.
Most mighty Caesar, let me know some cause, lest I be laughed at when I tell them so.
That cause is in my will, I will not come. That is enough to satisfy the Senate. But for your private satisfaction, because I love you, I will let you know Calpurnia here, my wife, stays me at home. She dreamt tonight she saw my statue, which like a fountain with 100 spouts did run pure blood, and many lusty Romans came smiling and did bathe their hands in it. And these she does apply for warnings and portents and evils imminent, and on her knee hath begged that I will stay at home today.
This dream is all a misinterpreted. It was a vision, fair and fortunate. Your statue spouting blood in many pipes in which so many smiling Romans bathed signifies that from you great Rome shall suck reviving blood, and that great men shall press for tinctures, stains, relics, and cognizance. This by Calpurnia's dream is signified.
And this way have you well expounded it.
I have, when you have heard what I can say. And know it now. The Senate have concluded to give this day a crown to mighty Caesar. If you shall send them word you will not come, their minds may change. Besides, it were a mock apt to be rendered for someone to say, break up the Senate till another time, when Caesar's wife shall meet with better dreams. If Caesar hide himself, shall they not whisper, lo, Caesar is afraid. Pardon me, Caesar, for my dear, dear love to your proceeding bids me tell you this, and reason to my love is liable.
How foolish do your fears seem now, Calpurnia? I am ashamed I did yield to them. Give me my robe, for I will go.
Good morrow, Caesar.
And look where Casca has come to fetch me. Welcome, Casca.
Good morrow, Caesar.
What, Brutus, are you stirred so early too?
Caesar, all hail.
Caius Cassius. Caesar was never so much your enemy as that same ague which hath made you lean. What is it, O'Clock?
Caesar, 'tis struck an 8.
I thank you for your pains and courtesy. I am to blame to be thus waited for. Now, Cinna, I have an hour's talk in store for you. Remember that you call on me today. Be near me that I may remember you.
Caesar, I will. And so near will I be that your best friends shall wish I had been further.
Good friends, go in and taste some wine with me, and we, like friends, will straightway go together. The Ides of March are come.
Aye, Caesar, but not gone.
And so Brutus, Cassius, and the rest accompany Caesar to the Senate House. The plan is in place. They will use a motion brought by Decius to surreptitiously surround Caesar. Then Casca will be the first to strike. Caesar takes his place on the Senate floor and commences to address the day's business, blithely unaware of the danger surrounding him.
Are we all ready? What is now amiss that Caesar and his Senate must redress?
Most high, most mighty, and most puissant Caesar, Decius Brutus throws before thy seat an humble heart.
I must prevent thee, Decius. These couchings and these lowly courtesies might fire the blood of ordinary men. But be not fond to think that Caesar bears such rebel blood that will be thawed from the true quality with that which melteth fools. I mean sweet words, low crooked curtsies, and base spaniel fawning. Thy brother by decree is banished. If thou dost bend and pray and fawn for him, I spur thee like a cur out of my way.
Is there no voice more worthy than mine own to sound more sweetly in great Caesar's ear for the repealing of my banished brother?
I kiss thy hand, but not in flattery, Caesar, desiring thee that Decius' brother may have an immediate freedom of repeal.
What, Brutus?
Pardon, Caesar. Caesar, pardon. As low as to thy foot doth Cassius fall to beg enfranchisement for Decius' brother.
I could be well moved if I were as you. If I could pray to move, prayers would move me. But I am constant as the northern star, of whose true fixed and resting quality there is no fellow in the firmament. The skies are painted with unnumbered sparks, but there's but one in all doth hold his place. So in the world, 'tis furnished well with men. Yet in the number I do know but one that unassailable holds on his rank unshaked of motions. And that I am he, let me a little show it even in this, that I was constant that he should be banished, and constant do remain to keep him so.
Oh, Caesar!
Hence wilt thou lift up Olympus.
Great Caesar!
Doth not Brutus bootless kneel?
Speak hence for me!
With that, Casca plunges his dagger deep into Caesar's back, and the other senators, weapons drawn, descend in a chaotic flurry. The blades find their target again and again, until finally Caesar's bloody body topples to the ground. His eyes meet those of Marcus Brutus, and he breathes out his last words.
Et tu, Brute? Then falls Caesar.
Liberty? Freedom? Tyranny is dead! Run hence, proclaim, cry it about the streets!
Some to the common pulpits and cry out, liberty, freedom, and enfranchisement!
People and senators, be not affrighted. Fly not, stand still. Ambition's debt is paid.
Go to the pulpit, Brutus.
And Cassius, too.
Where is Antony?
Fled to his house, amazed.
Stoop, Roman, stoop, and let us bathe our hands in Caesar's blood. Then walk we forth, even to the marketplace, and waving our red weapons over our heads, let's all cry, peace, freedom, and liberty!
Stoop, then, and wash. How often shall this not of us be called the men that gave their country liberty?
What, shall we forth?
Aye, every man away. Brutus shall lead, and we will grace his heels with the most boldest and best hearts of Rome.
But here comes Antony. Welcome, Mark Antony.
Oh, mighty Caesar, dost thou lie so low? Are all thy conquests, glories, triumphs, spoils shrunk to this little measure? I know not, gentlemen, what you intend. Who else must be let blood, who else is rank? If I, myself, there is no hour so fit as Caesar's death hour. I do beseech ye, if you bear me hard, now, whilst your purple hands do reek and smoke, fulfill your pleasure.
Oh, Antony, beg not your death of us. Though now we must appear bloody and cruel, our hearts you see not. They are pitiful, and pity to the general wrong of Rome hath done this deed on Caesar. For your part, to you our swords have leaden points, Mark Antony. Our arms do receive you in, with all kind love, good thoughts, and reverence.
Your voice shall be as strong as any man's in the disposing of new dignities.
Only be patient till we have appeased the multitude, beside themselves with fear. And then we will deliver you the cause why I, that did love Caesar when I struck him, have thus proceeded.
I doubt not of your wisdom. Let each man render me his bloody hand. First, Marcus Brutus, will I shake with you.
Next, Caius Cassius, do I take your hand? Now, Decius Brutus, yours, and my valiant Casca, yours. Friends, am I with you all and love you all upon this hope that you shall give me reasons why and wherein Caesar was dangerous?
Our reasons are so full of good regard that were you, Antony, the son of Caesar, you should be satisfied.
That's all I seek. And am, moreover, suitor that I may, as becomes a friend, speak in the order of his funeral.
You shall, Mark Antony.
Brutus, a word with you? You know not what you do. Do not consent that Antony speak in his funeral. Know you how much the people may be moved by that which he will utter?
By your pardon, I will myself into the pulpit first, and show the reason of our Caesar's death. What Antony shall speak, I will protest he speaks by leave and by permission.
I know not what may fall. I like it not.
Mark Antony, here, take you Caesar's body. You shall not in your funeral speech blame us, but speak all good you can devise of Caesar. And say you do it by our permission. You shall speak in the same pulpit whereto I am going, after my speech is ended.
Be it so. I do desire no more.
Prepare the body, then, and follow us.
Brutus leads his fellow conspirators out into the streets, leaving Antony standing solitary vigil over Caesar's corpse.
Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth, that I am meek and gentle with these butchers! Thou art the ruins of the noblest man that ever lived in the tide of times. Woe to the hand that shed this costly blood. Over thy wounds now I do prophesy. A curse shall light upon the limbs of men. Domestic fury and fierce civil strife shall cumber all the parts of Italy. And Caesar's spirit, ranging for revenge, with Ate by his side, come hot from hell, shall in these confines with a monarch's voice cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war, that this foul deed shall smell above the earth with carrion men groaning for burial.
Outside the Senate House, the riled citizens of Rome have gathered, demanding an explanation for what has occurred. Marcus Brutus solemnly ascends the pulpit to address them.
Public reason shall be rendered of Caesar's death.
The noble Brutus is ascended. Silence.
Romans, countrymen, and lovers, hear me for my cause and be silent that you may hear. If there be any in this assembly, any dear friend of Caesar's, to him I say that Brutus' love to Caesar was no less than his. If then that friend demand why Brutus rose against Caesar, this is my answer. Not that I loved Caesar less, but that I loved Rome more. Had you rather Caesar were living and die all slaves than that Caesar were dead to live all free men? As Caesar loved me, I weep for him. As he was fortunate, I rejoice at it. As he was valiant, I honor him. But as he was ambitious, I slew him. There is tears for his love, joy for his fortune, honor for his valor, and death for his ambition. Who is here so base that would be a bondman? If any, speak, for him have I offended. Who is here so rude that would not be a Roman? If any, speak, for him have I offended. Who is here so vile that will not love his country? If any, speak, for him have I offended. I pause for a reply.
None, Brutus! None!
Then none have I offended. The question of his death is enrolled in the Capitol, his glory not extenuated wherein he was worthy, nor his offenses enforced for which he suffered death. Here is his body, mourned by Mark Antony, who, though he had no hand in Caesar's death, shall receive the benefit of his dying, a place in the commonwealth, as which of you shall not? With this I depart, that as I slew my best lover for the good of Rome, I have the same dagger for myself when it shall please my country to need my death.
Give him a statue with his ancestors!
Let him be Caesar!
Bring him with triumph home into his house!
Good countrymen, let me depart alone. For my sake, stay here with Antony. Do grace to Caesar's corpse and grace his speech tending to Caesar's glories, which Mark Antony, by our permission, is allowed to make.
Stay who? And let us hear Mark Antony!
For Brutus' sake, I am beholding to you.
What does he say of Brutus? For best he speak no harm of Brutus here.
This Caesar was a tyrant!
We are blessed that Rome is rid of him.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often turreted with their bones. So let it be with Caesar. The noble Brutus hath told you Caesar was ambitious. If it were so, it was a grievous fault, and grievously hath Caesar answered it. Here, under the leave of Brutus and the rest, for Brutus is an honorable man, so are they all honorable men. Come I to speak in Caesar's funeral. He was my friend, faithful and just to me. But Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. When that the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. Ambition should be made of sterner stuff. Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. You all did see that on the Lupercal I thrice presented him a kingly crown, which he thrice refused. Was this ambition? Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and sure he is an honorable man. I speak not to disprove what Brutus spoke, but here I am to speak what I do know. You all did love him once, not without cause. What cause withholds you then to mourn for him? Bear with me. My heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me.
Methinks there is much reason in his sayings.
If thou consider rightly of the matter, Caesar has had great wrong.
Mark his words. He would not take the crown, therefore 'tis certain he was not ambitious.
Poor soul, his eyes are red as fire with weeping.
There's not a nobler man in Rome than Antony.
No, now mark him. He begins again to speak.
Oh, masters, if I were disposed to stir your hearts and minds to mutiny and rage, I should do Brutus wrong and Cassius wrong, who, you all know, are honorable men. I will not do them wrong. I rather choose to wrong the dead, to wrong myself and you, than I will wrong such honorable men. But here's a parchment with the seal of Caesar. I found it in his closet. 'Tis his will. Let but the commons hear this testament, which, pardon me, I do not mean to read. And they would go and kiss dead Caesar's wounds and dip their napkins in his sacred blood. Have patience, gentle friends. I must not read it. It is not meet you know how Caesar loved you. You are not wood, you are not stones, but men. And being men, hearing the will of Caesar, it will inflame you. It will make you mad. 'Tis good you know not that you are his heirs. For if you should, oh, what would come of it? Will you patient? Will you stay a while? I have o'ershot myself to tell you of it. I fear I wrong the honorable men whose daggers have stabbed Caesar. I do fear it. Here is the will. And under Caesar's seal to every Roman citizen he gives, to every several man, 75 drachmas. Moreover, he hath left you all his walks, his private arbors, and new planted orchards on this side Tiber. He hath left them you and to your heirs forever. Common pleasures to walk abroad and recreate yourselves. Here was a Caesar. When comes such another?
Never! Never! Come away! Away! We'll burn his body in the holy place, and with the brands fire all the traitors' houses. Take up the body!
Now let it work. Mischief, thou art afoot. Take thou what course thou wilt.
The violence and the frenzy sparked by Antony soon spreads throughout all Rome, tearing it apart. Civil unrest escalates to civil war. Neighbor turns on neighbor as allegiances are declared and battle lines drawn. Though Brutus, Cassius, and their cohorts are driven from Rome by the angry hordes, outside the city, they soon gather an army of those who believe them saviors of the Republic. Inside the city, Mark Antony commands those loyal to Caesar's name. Antony has recruited to the cause two compatriots, a respected, if ineffectual, senator named Lepidus, and none other than nephew to mighty Julius himself, Octavius Caesar. They have met to discuss their war plans and which senators within the city will be put to death.
These many then shall die. Their names are pricked.
Your brother too must die. Consent you, Lepidus?
I do consent.
Prick him down, Antony.
Upon condition, Publius shall not live. Who is your sister's son, Mark Antony?
He shall not live. Look, with a spot I damn him. But, Lepidus, go you to Caesar's house, fetch the will hither, and we shall determine how to cut off some charge in legacies.
What, shall I find you here?
Or here, or at the capital.
This is a slight, unmeritable man, meet to be sent on errands. Is it fit, the threefold world divided, he should stand one of the three to share it?
So you thought him? He's a tried and valiant soldier.
So is my horse, Octavius. Do not talk of him but as a property. And now, Octavius, listen great things. Brutus and Cassius are levying powers. We must straight make heed.
Let us do so, for we are at the stake and bayed about with many enemies, and some that smile have in their hearts, I fear, millions of mischiefs.
Outside of Rome, Marcus Brutus, who has found himself general of an army, sits in his tent, poring over maps, missives, and reports of corruption in his ranks. He is interrupted by the arrival of an irate Caius Cassius.
Most noble brother, you have done me wrong.
Judge me, you gods. Wrong I mine enemies? And if not so, how should I wrong a brother?
That you have wronged me doth appear in this. You have condemned and noted Lucius Pella for taking bribes here of the Sardians, wherein my letters, praying on his side because I knew the man, was slighted off.
You wronged yourself to write in such a case. Let me tell you, Cassius, you yourself are much condemned to have an itching palm, to sell and mart your offices for gold to undeservers.
Aye. An itching palm. You know you are Brutus that speak this, or by the gods this speech were else your last.
The name of Cassius honors this corruption, and chastisement doth therefore hide his head.
Chastisement!
Remember March? The Ides of March, remember! Did not great Julius bleed for justice's sake? What villain touched his body that did stab and not for justice? What, shall one of us that struck the foremost man of all this world, but for supporting robbers? Shall we now contaminate our fingers with base bribes and sell the mighty space of our large honors for so much trash as may be grasped thus? I had rather be a dog and bay the moon than such a Roman.
Brutus, bait not me. I'll not endure it. I am a soldier, I, older in practice, abler than you to make conditions.
Go to, you are not Cassius.
I am.
I say you are not.
Urge me no more. I shall forget myself. Have mind upon your health. Tempt me no further.
Away, slight man.
It's possible.
Hear me, for I will speak. Must I give way and room to your rash choler? Shall I be frighted when a madman stares? Fret till your proud heart break. By the gods, you shall digest the venom of your spleen, though it do split you. For from this day forth, I'll use you for my mirth, yea, for my laughter, when you are waspish.
It's come to this.
You say you are a better soldier. Let it appear so.
You wrong me every way. You wrong me, Brutus. I said an elder soldier, not a better. Did I say better?
If you did, I care not.
When Caesar live, he durst not thus have moved me.
Peace, peace. You durst not so have tempted him.
I durst not.
For your life, you durst not.
Do not presume too much upon my love. I may do that I shall be sorry for.
You have done that you should be sorry for.
Brutus hath rived my heart. You love me not.
I do not like your faults.
A friendly eye could never see such faults.
A flatterer's would not, though they do appear as huge as high Olympus.
Come, Antony, and young Octavius, come. Revenge yourselves alone on Cassius, for Cassius is a weary of the world. Hated by one he loves, braved by his brother, checked like a bondman, all his faults observed, set in a notebook, learned and conned by rout to cast into my teeth. Oh, I could weep my spirit from mine eyes. There is my dagger. and here my naked breast. Strike as thou didst at Caesar, for I know when thou didst hate him worse, thou lovest him better than thou ever loved Cassius.
Sheath your dagger. Be angry when you will, it shall have scope. O Cassius, you are yoked with a lamb that carries anger as the flint bears fire, who, much enforced, shows a hasty spark, and straight is cold again.
Hath Cassius lived to be but mirth and laughter to his Brutus, when grief and blood ill-tempered vexeth him?
When I spoke that, I was ill-tempered too.
Do you confess so much? Give me your hand.
And my heart too.
Oh, Brutus.
What's the matter?
Have you not love enough to bear with me when that rash humor which my mother gave me makes me forgetful?
Yes, Cassius. And from henceforth, when you are over earnest with your Brutus, he'll think your mother chides and leave you so. Lucius, a bowl of wine. In this I bury all unkindness, Cassius.
My heart is thirsty for that noble pledge. Fill, Lucius, till the wine o'erswells the cup. I cannot drink too much of Brutus' love.
My lord.
Come in, Decius. Welcome, good Casca. Now sit me close about this taper here, and call in question in necessities. Casca, I have here received letters that young Octavius and Mark Antony come down upon us with a mighty power, bending their expedition toward Philippi.
Myself have letters of the selfsame tenor.
With what addition?
That by prescription and bills of outlawry, Octavius, Antony, and Lepidus have put to death 100 senators.
What do you think of marching to Philippi presently?
I do not think it good.
Your reason?
'Tis better that the enemy seek us, so shall he waste his means and weary his soldiers.
Good reasons must of force give place to better. The people twixt Philippi and this ground do stand in a forced affection. The enemy, marching along by them shall make a fuller number up. Come on refreshed, new added and encouraged. From which advantage shall we cut him off, if at Philippi we do face him there?
Then with your will, go on. We'll along ourselves and meet them at Philippi.
There is no more to say.
No more. Good night. Early tomorrow will we rise and hence.
Lucius, my gown. Farewell, good Casca. Good night, Decius. Noble Cassius. Good night and good repose.
Oh, my dear brother, this was an ill beginning of the night. Never come such division tween our souls. Let it not, Brutus.
Everything is well.
Good night, my lord.
Good night, good brother.
The next morning sees two armies faced off on either side of the field of Philippi. At the head of their army, Antony and Octavius observe and consider their foe across the way.
Now, Antony, our hopes are answered. You said the enemy would not come down, but keep the hills and upper regions. It proves not so. Their battles are at hand. They mean to warn us at Philippi here, answering before we do demand of them.
They stand and would have parley.
Mark Antony, shall we give sign of battle?
No, Caesar, we will answer on their charge. Make forth, the generals would have some words.
In the middle of the field, the four generals, Brutus, Cassius, Antony, and Octavius, meet to parley. One last chance to avert bad blood with good words.
Words before blows, is it so, countrymen?
Not that we love words better, as you do.
Good words are better than bad strokes, Octavius.
In your bad strokes, Brutus, you give good words. Witness the hole you made in Caesar's heart, crying, "Long live, hail Caesar!" You showed your teeth like apes, and fawned like hounds, and bowed like bondsmen kissing Caesar's feet, whilst damned Casca like a cur behind struck Caesar in the neck. Oh, you flatterers!
Flatterers! Now, Brutus, thank yourself. This tongue hath not offended so today, if Cassius might have ruled.
Come, the cause. If arguing make us sweat, the proof of it will turn to redder drops. Look, I draw a sword against conspirators. When think you that the sword goes up again? Never, till Caesar's 33 wounds be well avenged, or till another Caesar have added slaughter to the sword of traitors.
Caesar, thou canst not die by traitors' hands, unless thou brings them with thee.
So I hope. I was not born to die on Brutus's sword.
Oh, if thou wert the noblest of thy strand, young man, thou couldst not die more honorable.
A peevish schoolboy, worthless of such honor, joined by a masquer and a reveler.
Old Cassius still.
Come, Antony, away. Defiance, traitors, hurl we in your teeth. If you dare fight today, come to the field. If not, when you have stomach.
Why now? Blow, wind, swell, billow, and swim, bark. The storm is up, and all is on the hazard. Now, most noble Brutus, if we do lose this battle, then this the very last time we shall speak together. What then are you determined to do?
Think not, thou noble Roman, that ever Brutus will go bound to Rome. He bears too great a mind. But this same day must end the work the Ides of March begun, and whether we shall meet again, I know not. Therefore our everlasting farewell take, forever and forever. Farewell, Cassius. If we do meet again, why, we shall smile. If not, why then this parting was well made.
Forever and forever, farewell, Brutus. If we do meet again, we'll smile indeed. If not, 'tis true this parting was well made.
Why then lead on. Oh, that a man might know the end of this day's business ere it come. But it sufficeth that the day will end, and then the end is known. Come ho, away!
And with that, the battle is enjoined. The day is long and bloody, and the advantage balanced on a knife's point, tipping first towards one side, then the other. But as the battle wages inexorably on, it becomes undeniably plain that the forces of Antony and Octavius are prevailing, and the day will soon be theirs. In the midst of the field, a bruised and battered Cassius witnesses his own forces fleeing the battle.
Oh, look, Decius, look, the villains fly.
Oh, Cassius, Brutus gave the word too early, who, having some advantage on Octavius, took it too eagerly. His soldiers fell to spoil, whilst we by Antony are all enclosed. Fly, therefore, noble Cassius, fly, far off.
This hill is far enough, Decius. My life is run his compass.
My lord?
Come hither, Decius. In Parthia, saving of thy life, thou sworest that whatsoever I did bid thee do, thou shouldst attempt it. Come now, keep thine oath, and with this good sword that ran through Caesar's bowels, search this bosom.
My lord!
Stand not to answer. Here, take thou the hilt, and when my face is covered, as 'tis now, guide thou the sword. Caesar, thou art revenged even with the sword that killed thee.
Oh, Julius Caesar, thou art mighty yet. Thy spirit walks abroad and turns our swords in our own proper entrails. The last of all the Romans, fare thee well. Oh, Cassius, far from this country Decius shall run, where never Roman shall take note of him.
Elsewhere on the field, Marcus Brutus has fought doggedly on against the increasingly dire odds. But upon the news of Cassius' demise, his last spark of defiance, it seems, is extinguished.
Come, poor remains of friends. Rest on this rock. Come hither, good Casca. List the word.
What says my lord?
Why this, Casca? The ghost of Caesar hath appeared to me, two several times by night, at Sardis once, and this last night here in Philippi Fields. I know my hour is come.
Not so, my lord.
Nay, I am sure it is, Casca. Thou seest the world, how it goes. Our enemies have beat us to the pit. It is more worthy to leap in ourselves than tarry till they push us. Good Casca, thou knowest that we two went to school together. Even for that, our love of old, I prithee, hold thou my sword hilt while I run on it.
That's not an office for a friend, my lord.
Fly, fly, my lord, there is no tarrying here.
Countrymen, my heart doth joy that yet in all my life I found no man but he was true to me. I shall have glory by this losing day, more than Octavius and Mark Antony by this vile conquest shall attain unto.
Fly, my lord, fly!
Go, hence, I will follow. I prithee, Lucius, stay thou by thy lord. Thou art a fellow of a good respect. Thy life hath had some smatch of honor in it. Hold then my sword, and turn away thy face, while I do run upon it. Wilt thou, Lucius?
Give me your hand first. Fare you well, my lord.
Farewell, good Lucius. Caesar! Now be still! I killed not thee with half so good a will.
Even as Brutus' body slides from the sword on which he has thrown himself, Octavius, Antony, and the now captured Casca appear.
What man is that?
It is Brutus, man. Lucius, where is thy master?
Free from the bondage you are in, Casca. The conquerors can but make a fire of him. For Brutus only overcame himself, and no man else hath honor by his death.
How died thy master, Lucius?
I held the sword, and he did run on it.
This was the noblest Roman of them all. All the conspirators, save only he, did that they did in envy of great Caesar. He only, in general honest thought and common good to all, made one of them. His life was gentle, and the elements so mixed in him that nature might stand up and say to all the world, this was a man.
According to his virtue, let us use him, with all respect and rites of burial. Within my tent his bones tonight shall lie, most like a soldier, ordered honorably. So call the field to rest, and let's away to part the glories of this happy day. Thank you so much for joining us for this audio presentation of William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. What you have heard tonight is an adaptation of our free Shakespeare in the Park tour, an example of the community and educational outreach that Cincinnati Shakespeare Company brings to our region. Tonight's presentation would not be possible without our seasoned sponsors, the Otto M. Buttig Family Foundation, the John Bridgeland, Crilly, Long, and Mason families honoring James R. Bridgeland Jr., the Ohio Arts Council, the Robert and Adele Schiff Family Foundation, the Carol Ann and Ralph V. Hale Jr. Foundation, and the generosity of tens of thousands of contributors to the Arts Wave Community Campaign. We also send special thanks to our digital season sponsors, Bartlett Wealth Management and Barnes Denig, and our park tour sponsor, the Makino Foundation. Thank you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to tonight's broadcast of Julius Caesar, performed by Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. Tonight's production was adapted and directed for radio by Jeremy Dubin, based on the production directed by Christian Wiltshire, and featured the voice talents of Marcus Anthony, Angelique Archer, Ariana Chai, Sarah Clark, Colleen Dougherty, Jeremy Dubin, Cal Harris, Lennon Hu, Abigail Rose Nacken, and Brian Isaac Phillips. Recording, editing, and sound design by Kevin Samancic. The production manager was Abby Housen. Broadcast coordinator and sound engineer for WVXU was Stephen Baum. Cincinnati's arts community is essential to the vitality and growth of our region, and WVXU is proud to partner with Cincinnati Shakespeare Company to bring you this production from their Shakespeare in the Park program. It's made possible by the support of WVXU's sustaining and annual members. If you'd like to listen to this production again, go to wvxu.org.